All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot-button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Live here from the Internet Law Center here in very sunny, very hot Santa Monica, the heart of Silicon Beach. We got another great show for you today, and we're talking from across the pond with Yair Cohen. He is the founder of the London-based Cohen Davis Solicitors, and we're going to be talking about some of the trouble Google's getting in on the other side of the pond with EU regulators over antitrust issues. There are now 2 to 3 investigations currently ongoing, and we're going to walk through those and talk about, in general, a little about what's going on in Europe with a number of U.S. companies seem to have been ensnared by regulatory actions and investigatory actions on the EU. So we're going to talk about that. We got some news updates just very quickly to share. The California Supreme Court is going to review the Yelp case involving Hassel v. Bird. It's a case in which a law firm was able to get a Yelp review taken down without naming Yelp to the complaint. It's caused quite an uproar within the internet community, and it is now going on appeal to the California Supreme Court, where it should be quite a battle. In addition, I want to highlight there's a major social media movement going on in the Arab world, and it's particularly in Saudi Arabia, where we've seen and we've had guests on before talk about the influence and the use of Twitter to really bring about social change. And there's a movement on Twitter right now called hashtag I am my own guardian. Currently in Saudi Arabia, there are repressive laws that limit women's freedom because men are their guardians. They're either their son or their husband or someone is assigned as their guardian and can deny them the right to work, the right to travel, even the right to seek medical treatment. And over 15,000 women have signed a petition online to end those guardianship laws. And it's all happened through Twitter. So it's a major development. Hopefully we'll have someone to talk about that later on. Very quickly, today is also International Right to Know Day, which is about allowing freedom of information policies that encourage full disclosure and discussion of debates, investigation into human rights abuses. And it's kind of sad that Amnesty International reports that Thailand is threatening it over its release of a report about the use of torture by the current military regime. So, but without further ado, let me bring on Yair. Well, thank you for joining us. Are you calling from London or Essex?
I'm calling from Essex today, dark and cloudy Essex.
I'm sure it's just like here. But I want to thank you for joining us. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your practice?
Oh, we are a practice specializing in internet law. I've been doing this for about 20 years now, from the very early days of the internet. And we specialize in data protection matters, internet law. And coincidentally, there are a number of competition issues that are arising, as you would know, Bennett, as part of internet law. So we are pioneers here, and we are the first law firm to have obtained injunctions against Google, against Facebook, against all of other service providers. So, it is very, very interesting here. And it is fantastic to be able to interact with you guys, especially with you, Bennett, and your law firm.
Thank you very much. It's a thrill to have you here. Yair and I belong to a group called the Internet Law Leadership Summit. We meet twice a year, normally in Las Vegas, although this December we will be in Miami Beach. Looking forward to that. And so a little bit easier for you, but I'm sure the people in Vegas will miss our hijinks. But so let's let's talk in general. For those who don't know what antitrust law is, how would you explain it to the layman?
Trust law is a fancy word that lawyers use to describe competition law. I think when you say competition law, it seems suddenly a lot more clearer. So it is the idea that organizations should act in the benefit of the consumers and never become large enough. They could become large enough, but never become large enough and then abuse their position to the detriment of the consumers. So it is really about competition law.
And so, I mean, in general and theoretically, a monopoly isn't bad per se. I mean, if you develop something, in fact, we have patents are monopolies. You know, we give you the right to exploit something exclusively under the law. And, you know, if you come up with some innovation and you are the first in the market, you have a right to exploit and, you know, obviously to enjoy the benefits of your inventiveness. But it's when you try to use it to leverage that to gain competitive advantage in other markets that you run afoul, correct?
Well, I think in the United States, and you correct me if I'm wrong about it, because I know you know a fair bit about competition law in the United States, the key there is taking steps to deliberately exclude competitors from the market.
Right.
And this is what is not allowed. You're not allowed to take steps for the sole purpose of excluding other people from the market, because if you do that, it's great to have a monopoly, and I appreciate that monopolies have can have huge amount of resources and then innovate by creating a monopoly and then deliberately excluding any competition. We could create market stagnation, and if we create market stagnation, then there's no competition, there's no technological benefits, and of course prices could become quite high for the consumers. So I think in Europe, I mean, this is a funny one because the European Union or the European Economic Area, which is pretty much the similar thing, is a group of European countries that got together and created, guess what, a monopoly. they have created an exclusion zone, okay, where what it means is that it is okay to have to exclude competition as long as the competition is coming out from the outside that a protectionist zone. So the idea of the European Economic Area is really to protect the economic interests of the members. So take something very basic, such as olive oil. Even if olive oil that is grown in, Algeria, is much cheaper to produce and import into the European Union, there will be such high levels of taxation just to make it more difficult for that olive oil to be imported, because Italy is part of the European Union, and the European Union will do everything they can in order to protect the Italians' olive oil interests. So it's that simple.
Right. Anyone who's seen The Godfather knows about the Italians' olive oil interests.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So Google first runs afoul of the antitrust laws with allegations that they are diverting traffic in search from rivals to favor their own properties.
Mm.
And could you tell us about that?
Yeah. So once you under European law, once you become dominant, so once you attain a dominant position, and we talk about dominant position, we talk about market share of about 40%. So once you have 40% share of the market, this is the point where the European Commission, which is the competition police in Europe, will start looking into your business. And you will need to justify yourself and your conduct and behavior. So Google has got no less than 90% of the market share in Europe. So in Europe, we know hardly anything other than Google. I think in the United States, what is it, Ben? It's 60-70% market share?
It's something like that. I mean, frankly, I don't know many people who don't use Google, but there are some people who use Bing and Opera and Safari and other search engines. But by and large, Google is the show.
Yeah. So market share is 90%. That means that pretty much everyone is using Google. And so what it means is that Google has got a dominant position. So the question now is, does Google abuse the dominant position? And Google is a lot of things, as we know. Google is a search engine, but Google provides all sorts of other services, and particularly in relation to advertising. And now we have Google Shops, Google Store, they call it, and there's all sorts of other things. So initially, I think it was in 2010 with the first case where the European Commission said, look, we want to look into some of your practices because we think that you as Google are excluding search engines that provide comparison store websites. So in relation to products, if you search for a new television set, then one of the first search results will be a Google Store, and there will be all sorts of options to compare from. However, there are other search engines that also provide the same sort of service, but Google will deliberately exclude those other search engines from its first page or the first few results, and the European Commission wasn't very happy with that.
And so some of you may know sites like Shopzilla is one example of so just to back up a little bit, in I started my career working at a firm that was one of the leading antitrust firms in the country, and it's an interesting field of the law because a lot of it isn't based on law, but economics. And so you have to find market dominance, but you have to define the market. And that's actually where there's a lot of opportunities for, we hired teams of economists and to go through and to help define what actually is the market. And at what point, do you have monopoly power? If you can prove, if there's a theory that if you raise prices X percent, if someone else would enter into the market, then you don't have monopoly power. So it's actually a very interesting field to get into, especially if you have an interest in economics. So the theory here is that the relevant market is search. Google has monopoly power in search. And the other market was the market for comparison shopping, and that Google was trying to leverage its monopoly power or in search to disadvantage its competitors in the comparison shopping sites.
Yeah, that's right. That's correct. So what Google was doing, it was allegedly, of course, it was artificially lowering the rank of the competition's comparison search engines, and ranking its own service very, very high, regardless of merit. So not to the benefit of the consumers. And the other thing, go on.
What is your assessment of that? Because the FTC, obviously, it's a global market. It's and the internet, just by definition, you don't fly over the Atlantic and say, oh, there's the border for the UK internet. And so the FTC actually investigated these very allegations and declined to go there in 2013. They declined to take action. But what is your assessment of that, very briefly?
The word that is out there is that there are some regrets in relation to that, and we know that Google again is under the radar of the Federal Trade Commission. But more importantly, in terms of market share, Google's market share has been 90% in Europe, but again only 60-70% in the United States, which makes a whole lot of a difference because 60% is a large proportion, but still it's not completely dominating the market. So on this basis, we can, I think, distinguish the decision of the U.S. Federal Trade Commission from the decision of the European Commission.
Well, we have to do our share to promote competition, so we're going to take a short break to allow our sponsors to express their relative competitive merit to our consumers and listeners. So we'll be back after these messages. You're listening to CyberLaw and Business Report, only on Cranberry.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the CyberLaw and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Is your website hacked? Is your website displaying error messages or loading slowly? Even if there are no signs of malicious activity, your site may still be compromised. Websites, like cars, require regular maintenance to perform at their best and not leave you stranded. At Fjorge, our website maintenance experts can help you assess which one of our maintenance plans will best support your needs. Visit fjorgedigital.com or call 612-877-3840 and get the support and protection your website and business deserve. That's fjorgedigital.com.
It's time to take your ad testing out of the Mesozoic era and into the Ezoic era. Ezoic is the world's first machine learning platform, creating tailored ad combinations to monetize your website. Our automated ad testing not only boosts ad income, but increases page views, improves bounce rate, and will impress the user experience. Start your 30-day free trial today at ezoic.com and join thousands of publishers who are already earning 60% more with Ezoic. That's ezoic.com. Ezoic, make your website smarter. Ezoic is a Google certified publishing partner.
Looking for a white label SEO and social platform for your clients? Think
eBrands.
Free and unlimited SEO audit reports.
eBrands.
Premium Facebook apps and welcome page creators.
eBrands.
Twitter management app, analytics, and mobile site generators.
eBrands.
Let eBrands manage your search and social media campaigns and give you and your clients access to their white label dashboard, which have great reports that will wow your clients and deliver great ROI and results. Try eBrands for 30 days. Go to eBrandsWithAZ.com or call 1-866-625-5717. That's eBrands with a Z for
eBrands.
Add some Cranberry Radio podcast to your playlist as part of a better profit margin. Cranberry Radio. It's good for you. Really.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Here is Bennett Kelly.
I'm talking with Yari Cohen, and we've been talking about the current EU-Google battles over antitrust law, and we were talking about the first Google EU investigation that began in 2010 over the allegations that they were diverting search traffic to their benefit and then to the detriment of competing comparison shopping sites. And so in May 2016... the EU says they're going to seek a $3 billion fine. Is that unprecedented? Have they ever sought something of that size against any other company?
Well, it is unprecedented, and I'll tell you why. Let's just go back to the investigation itself, because I think this is quite important to put the level of potential fine in the right context. Because what Google then was doing, which is again part of the investigation, was that it was forcing advertisers, Google advertisers, to not use competitors' advertising, and then it was making it very, very difficult for them to move to take their data away, and if they wanted to move to a different provider. But what the commission is saying, look, you're not only excluding people from your search results or competition from your search results, you're also making it very difficult for in relation to your page results, and you make it far more expensive for competition to go onto the page results, and you preventing people from using any competition in the page result. So the level of damages that the European Commission can say is up to 10%. Listen to this, Bennett. Up to 10% of the defendant's turnover. So it's not the defendant's profit. It's not the defendant's turnover in the European economic area, but it's 10% of the profit, and that could be quite a lot of money. So the reason why this is unprecedented is because quite often those sort of cases don't go that far, because you can imagine the potential financial damage. So what Google did, they offered to settle the case, and they made a number of offers, and eventually they made some concessions, and they made some changes to the way the search works and the way they display our competition, but that wasn't satisfactory to the European Commission, and they decided to continue to pursue Google. So whether ultimately the level of fine will be imposed on Google, I don't know. I think they might not have a choice subsequently but to try and settle the case again.
So what is, and I know we have other investigations going on, but in that phase of the investigation, what is the next step there?
The next step is now the way it works is the initial stages are sort of almost informal investigation, and then there are discussions between say the European Commission and Google, and then the European Commission can start a more formal stage. Which is called a statement of objection. So the European community say, look, we are objecting to certain practices that you're carrying out. Mm-hmm. Google then will have a right of defense, and after that there will be a decision. So where we are now, there has been a number of statement of objections. So each time Google came back with further information, trying really to defend its position, I think it's only made its position worse, because the commission came back and said, oh, now in view of the further information that you provided, we actually feel that the case against you is much stronger. So this is where we are. I think we are on the third or the fourth statement of objection, which means statement of objection is almost a claim. So it's almost a formal claim or a subpoena, whenever you call it in America. So this is where we are, and Google now has a right to defend itself, and it is preparing its defense to the latest statements of objection. And as all this is happening, I'll let you introduce the latest investigation.
Yes, it's leading up to it's almost like it's like the Star Wars series. Okay, this is episode two. And our Jedi search engine now stumbles into the Android market, and there's allegations with they may have misused their market position in Android. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, because you were talking about previously how a market is defined. So we say, look, we have the search market, then we have the comparison search market. Then we have maybe the mobile phone search market, but also have the mobile phone market. And within the mobile phone market, Android in Europe is absolutely huge. And what the European Commission is saying is that Google is being a little bit naughty, in a sense that it is excluding any possible competition in relation to its Android operating systems, and also that it forces manufacturers to install as a default search engine Google Search. And once you got Google Search, of course, as a default, it follows that people will use Google Search, will get those comparison shopping websites, and we go run and run and run in circles.
Gee, that sounds familiar. And actually, it sounds, not only does it sound familiar from what we said earlier on the show, but it's almost the identical thing that got Microsoft in trouble here in the U.S. Mm. You know, it was, you know, tying use of the Internet, you know, Internet Explorer to the Windows operating system.
It is almost identical in the sense that, that they are really tying the operating system into the search engine. And I think the thing about it is that these are two separate investigations, so potentially there are two separate sets of fines of 10% of Google's turnover. This is the significance, I think, of commencing a completely separate investigation, because what the European Commission does quite often, there are different complaints, and then they merge everything into one single investigation. But in this case, they kept those investigations quite independent of one another.
But let me ask you this, though. Would the fine that would be assessed would be 10% of revenue from Android or 10% of all Google?
Of the company's turnover.
Holy.
So now, I don't know. Look, we can have a guess what is Google's total turnover, but we're talking turnover. That is Bennett, before tax, before expenses, before everything else. So we're talking, I mean, this is huge. And also the interesting thing is the European Commission is allowing itself, or the Europeans are allowing themselves to impose fines over turnover that might not have anything to do at all with Europe, of course, because I think the majority of Google's profit is probably not in Europe, but in the United States and other countries.
Now, that's kind of suspect. But what do you think of the economic theory? Is, you know, when you have other phone systems, when you have Apple and you have, I mean, granted, it's not as Windows, but it's not huge. Is the relevant market Android, or is the relevant market all mobile phones?
Yeah, it brings us back to the market share argument. And I don't know what the market share of Android in the United States is. I mean, we don't have that many. I mean, what have we got? We got iPhone, we have Androids, we have a Nokia, which is, you know, Microsoft phone.
Yeah.
And BlackBerry is pretty much dead, I think. I hope I'm not going to get sued for saying this. But
the president of the United States will probably just launch a drone strike against you as a devoted BlackBerry user. But any event, you hear a buzzing noise coming from background.
You might want
to move, but...
we have the Patriot, you know. Israelis are the. I happen also to be an Israeli, so Israelis are the largest users of the anti-missile Patriot system, which is in a great American.
That may save you this for the next half hour, but it raises an interesting question.
So we have a market share here of 80% of Androids in Europe, which is huge, and Microsoft phones hardly exist, and the rest of the market belongs to iPhone. Now the interesting thing about Android is this: is that it is an open source code. The whole idea is that anyone can join in and tweak it and create something new out of it. What Google seem to be doing, allegedly, of course, because I don't want to get sued by Google now for defamation or anything like that. But according to the European Commission, what Google does, it provides the largest telephone manufacturers incentives and sign them all sorts of agreements to make sure they never, ever, ever use any open source or any sort of competitive system to the Android system. So what it means in real terms is the Android system can, you know, it stops the Android system from being developed. from being
right.
from being, you know, the European Commission thinks that that harms competition and it is quite unfair, and that consumers are not really benefiting from it. So, yeah, so 80%, that's a lot. That's a lot. Market share. And again, the thing is that it goes back to the search engines. So forget the operating system. I think what is important here is the searches. And then it's the paid searches, and it is the unpaid searches, and it is the Google stores, and it's the shopping, which at one point, I assume Google will be getting some revenue out of that as well, out of every purchase that is being carried out through its search engine. So everything seems to be linked together. In terms of Google wish to dominate the market, what Google really wants, Google wants its search engine to be the only one being used, so that it can benefit from all sorts of other things that follow, like, you know, the shop. Yeah.
Now, it seemed, and you highlighted an important point, the whole focus of antitrust in theory and antitrust laws is the strong belief that monopolization stifles innovation. And there are a lot of people who are very critical of the dropping of the antitrust case against Microsoft that had started under the Clinton administration, and the Bush administration dropped it over the objections of Robert Bork, who was a famed antitrust lawyer and very pro-market antitrust lawyer, and who actually was shocked by the decision not to go after Microsoft. And people say that part of the reason why some people are stuck with Microsoft, at least during the few years after that, in terms of Windows and the operating system, people being very unhappy with it, was because Microsoft was able to use its dominance to avoid having to innovate. And you know, now I think the market's getting more competitive, and they're having to respond. And so, you know, there's a benefit to consumers from innovation. And then the cell phone, look at the whole iPhone and the Android market. You know, that's an innovation that's created great benefit. And so that's what's going on here. People are trying to allow greater innovation, and which usually that brings value to consumers.
Yes, I think some of the practices go beyond this because the other thing that Google seems to be doing is because of its technical ability, which is obviously superior to any other search engine at the moment, that they are able to effectively steal snippets. Or snippets are those little bits of writing from competitive search engines and display them on Google searches without actually giving any benefit to that search. So it's a complete clearance. But you know, I worried about monopoly. I don't want to sound as if I hate monopolies, because like everyone else, you know, we all love competition. But I think that, as you say, the majority of us use only Google. But let's not forget what happened to the telephone industry in the United States.
Right.
And there was a point in time, I believe, where there was loads and loads and loads of telephone providers, but not every American home had a telephone. And then there was a period where there was a consolidation of the market with pretty much one company running the whole show. And that actually brought the telephones and into every American home.
They did.
And made it hugely affordable as well. So there are some benefits in having monopolies, but I think that in this case...
It's interesting you mentioned that, because on the same time, there was all this innovation that would happen in the 90s and 2000s that had been sitting in AT&T's closet, and because they had monopoly power, they didn't really feel any pressing need to pursue those, and that later became, you know, the wireless technology and the other technologies we've seen expand in the last 20 years. And so, yeah, I mean, there was some benefit to allowing a monopoly to lay down the infrastructure and build it out, but yeah, there was also other prices that were paid. So now we get to, I guess we did the Return of the Jedi, and now we're on to The Empire Strikes Back, the third installment of the EU investigation into Google. And that is now there's an investigation into their AdWords program. And we're going to take a short break. We'll come back. We'll talk about that and more. You're listening to Cyberlaw and Business Report only on Cranberry.fm.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyberlaw and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
Are you paying too much for your paid advertising, or have you quit altogether because it seemed like a huge waste of money? Studies show that companies waste 25% of their PPC spend on average. The web marketing experts at WMETraining.com can show you how to make your AdWords account a lean, mean converting machine. Whether you're just starting out or want to take your skills to the next level, we have a class for you. Contact the web marketing experts at WMETraining.com.
All of your favorite WebmasterRadio.fm programs.
Affiliate Buzz. Next Gen Now.
CEO Coach.
Cyber Law and Business Report.
Have found a new home. SEO Rockstars.
SEM Synergy.
Webcology.
SEO 101.
PPC Rockstars.
Purse Strings with Maria Retan.
All of your favorite WebmasterRadio.fm programs have found a new home. Cranberry Radio. Cranberry.fm. Cranberry Radio. We're everywhere. Find our shows on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and anywhere you download your podcasts. Pick out some new favorite podcasts now.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Here is Bennett Kelly.
And we're back. This is Bennett Kelly with Cyberlaw Business Report, and I have with me Yair Cohen, and we've been talking about the EU's antitrust struggles with Google, and can you just briefly tell us what's this third investigation that's going on with AdWords?
Yes. So we know Google has got the what we call natural searches, which is what we discussed the first part of this program, and then it has got the paid search results, and you would have thought that there will be a fair play here, that pay per click as we know it, and what Google is accused of doing is preventing its users or its advertisers from using other providers or other equivalent of Google in terms of I got a little bit of a struggle here. Let me start again. What seemed to be the case is that advertisers who display Google advertising on the websites are stopped by Google from preventing other type of advertising. So the allegation is that Google wants to turn itself into the sole provider of advertising. So all the advertising on the internet effectively will be Google advertising, which is again a completely different market. There is a whole market of selling advertising. Like we know from the offline, there are advertising agencies. So what Google seem to be trying to do is telling advertisers, look, you can only use us, and if you don't want to use us, then if you don't want to use us exclusively, then you cannot display Google advertising on your websites at all.
Okay. Now, I want to jump in because there's also a bigger picture here. And we, in addition to the three Google antitrust investigations, here's just a short roster of some other things. And we have information on this, by the way, in our show notes, which are at cyberlawradio.wordpress.com. And so check it out. But you have Apple. Apple also has an antitrust investigation and now has the huge tax investigation going on, where there's a big battle with the EU over taxation, saying that they've been unnecessarily sheltering tax loopholes in Ireland. Google has the three antitrust investigations, as well as the right to be forgotten lawsuits, and they also have tax issues going on. Amazon also has an antitrust investigation, and they also have some tax issues going on with Luxembourg. Microsoft, also battling over the right to be forgotten, also has antitrust issues. Facebook, they have a huge data privacy investigation going on. They have antitrust issues in Germany and tax issues in Britain. Qualcomm also has antitrust issues. You know, it seems like the view from, you know, Silicon Valley is, you know, the EU has become like the dangerous hood. Not the, you know, don't walk there late at night. It seems like, you know, they're just trying to jump us, and you know, mainly because we got a competitive advantage. We got the leg up on them in the internet, and now they're trying to play catch up and they're trying to handicap our companies.
Well, look, let's take one example. Let's take the Apple tax
thing. Sure.
And you might be able, and the listeners might be able to realize that those investigations in a way are benefiting the American people or the American taxpayer, and this is why, because it seems that over its operations in Ireland, where Apple is based, Apple is paying, has been paying, not 0.6% rate of tax. Not 0.6% rate of tax. Now, we have here in Europe what is called corporation tax. I know there is something similar in the United States, yeah? But what do you call it, Bennett?
Corporation tax? Yeah, we have corporation tax.
So it is corporation tax.
But and if you're not the president, you don't have to pay him.
Well, the usual rate of corporation tax, I mean, here in the UK is 20%, and it's between 15 and 20% in different states in Europe. So what Ireland decided to do, they decided to undercut the rest of Europe in terms of taxes and offer a tax haven, okay? And they then decided to offer a specialist treatment to Apple, where all the other companies will be paying 10 up to 12% corporation tax in Ireland, which is still lower than the rest of Europe. But Apple is paying not 0.6%. So what the European Commission said, hang on for a second, you know, you should have paid 14 billion, or say, let's call it 15 billion US dollars roughly in tax. So you would have thought that the Irish would be quite happy about it, because, you know, they're going to, you know, the European Commission told Apple they have to pay back to the Irish government 15 billion US dollars in tax. But the Irish are not happy. They're saying, no, we don't want this money. we don't want this money. No, thank you very much. We want to carry on giving Apple that specialist treatment. Now, by giving Apple that sort of treatment, the risk, of course, is that Apple and other companies will be diverting profits from the United States as well from other countries to countries where they only pay not 0.6% tax, which is ridiculous.
So, yeah, we've actually had someone on who's written a book about, you know, basically how corporations, you know, legally get away with paying no taxes. And you know, we had a special on at April 15th a few years back discussing this. And Apple does have this huge kind of shell game where it tries to move all – claim all of its income is happening in Ireland, which is – just sounds ludicrous.
It is ludicrous, and you can think of it as anti-competitive behavior by Ireland towards its other member states of the EU. And the rest of the club is saying, hang on for a second. So you offering 0.6%. So tomorrow England will be offering 0.06%. We're going to end up with people paying, corporations paying absolutely no tax. And they're all going to move out. They're all going to move the tax facilities from the United States and from other places in Europe to whoever going to offer them, totally ridiculous level of tax to pay. So that right. cannot be acceptable, right? So I don't think they're picking on Apple or on Amazon or anything like that. I think it's the other way around. I think is the European Commission has been, because it's such a massive bureaucratic organization, they've been asleep for far too long. And then you have those big, massive corporations that really are, they've been taking advantage of a very weak commission in Europe. And therefore, they've been enjoying huge tax benefits that they would never have got in America.
So what about the other than that? Do you think there is a sense that in the EU that there's a feeling that we need to protect European internet businesses, so let's try to go after the American big boys, or it's
no,
just
no, I don't think that there is any realistic European alternative to Google, although. The original claim against Google in relation to its search engines came from a French search engine company. So they actually started this whole thing. Not that they ever be able to match Google or anything like that. So I think even though the whole thing was started by a French company, they thought, let's see if we can ever go Google here. Ultimately, it is unrealistic to believe that the action against Google or against Amazon are there for the benefit of corporations that are based in Europe. They are arguably for the benefit of the citizens of Europe. That the European Commission said, look, you should pay a fair amount of taxes, your fair share of taxes, and also you should be able to offer, European citizens want to have some alternatives. They don't want to be imprisoned by one corporation and have absolutely no other choice.
So. Yeah, Ari, let me cut you short because we only have about 4 minutes left, and I want to get some cover a couple little additional ground. One is you have a book coming out. Why don't you tell us what that is very briefly?
Oh, my book is coming up in a couple of weeks' time, and it is about another trend that is going on in Europe, and it's to do with the whole concept of policing the internet. So what it is. All about is the idea that the internet should no longer remain self-policed, and there should be more intervention or higher level of intervention by government or by actual police into the way the internet is being policing itself. And I think one of the examples is the recent Facebook case in New York in relation to allegation that Facebook has been helping a terrorist organization to facilitate their activities. And what Facebook is saying, in quite a lot of these instances, the users haven't breached our own terms and conditions. However, the allegations are that the terms and conditions or the self-policing system of Facebook in this instance is not sufficient and hasn't proven itself to be effective. So the risk, of course, is that there is going to come a time where we have a higher level of government intervention in relation to what has been happening on the internet. But it is a controversial book. It's something to think about. And I think it is inevitable, and we can see it happening very, very slowly. We have more and more government intervention into what's been happening online.
No, it's an interesting topic. In fact, just last week, I was at a presentation on fueling extremism on the internet that was sponsored by the U.S. Holocaust Museum and Loyola Marymount University, and it's actually included in the show notes. And just after I came back from the presentation, I noticed that the Congressional Research Service, which is an arm of the Library of Congress, had done a report on this very topic. And, you know, what to do, because there are some people that want Twitter and Facebook and others to crack down on terrorist organizations that may be utilizing social media platforms. And the problem is, as you mentioned in your book, The Net is Closing, Birth of the E-Police, the way the American's perspective is that laws that criminalize the dissemination of the pure advocacy of terrorism without more would likely be deemed unconstitutional, that you can go after incitement to acts, but just incitement to supporting a terrorist cause is not enough to warrant criminal prosecution, is the view over here. But it is an interesting topic, and so when the book comes out, we may want to bring you back on to have that debate. Now, one other thing I want to point out before, tell us where how people can find out more information about you and your firm.
We are carrying on with our good work. We are here to help many of those individuals and organizations that sometimes feel a little bit lost with the internet, with the globalization, or with the old concept that they might be attacked online, or they might be sabotaged by sort of mysterious people online. And what I find is that quite often, as you would know from your work, Bennett, is that there's no one to speak to, there's no person to turn to. Facebook is faceless, as we like to call it. And what we do, we provide them with the support that they need. We obtain the disclosure order that they need. We have great relationship with people such as yourself and your company. And we really try to benefit as many people as we can in a world that is very highly specialist. And as you know, you've got to be very, very careful how you conduct yourself even as a lawyer on the internet.
Exactly. And we only have a few seconds left. I'm going to be speaking tomorrow at the California State Bar annual meeting in San Diego, doing a presentation on ethical issues of playing in the social media sandbox. Check out the State Bar website. It will be streamed live on the internet, so check it out. Check us out at internetlawcenter.net. Check out the show. Show notes are at cyberlawradio.wordpress and on Twitter at cyberlawradio. Yair Cohen, thank you once again. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much.
Reaching across the pond. And this is Bennett Kelly. You've been listening to the Cyber Law and Business Report. We'll be back next week with another edition of the latest in internet law and policy. Thank you for joining us. Have a great week.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and their guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of Cranberry News Marketing and Cranberry.fm. Rebroadcasts or retransmission of this content without proper consent is prohibited.